So I'm going to tell you all a story about my grandfather and I. When I was young, for many summers in a row, he would take me and maybe a friend or my little sister or such to Southern California. And I grew up in Thousand Oaks. And Southern California was a place, if you don't know, is wild and barren and full of people who don't speak English and know nothing about our culture. Where it's two worlds apart. I'm talking about Baja California. You cross the border and it's a different culture. It's like you're in a different country. I didn't realize that there were two parts of California till I started spending my summers down near the bottom of Baja California, near a city called La Paz. So I'll give you a brief about my grandfather, who was a real man's man. And I'll, my mother told me before I started this, I called her and said, "Hey, tell me some details." And she goes, "Charlie, are you going to tell a story about Bapa at Slolio?" I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Be gentle with Bapa." It was her father. So Bapa was his name, and I knew him only as Bapa. And even at this time, as a young man, I did not know his name. I knew him as Bapa. And so Bapa would take us down. We would drive out of Thousand Oaks and all the way down to the bottom end of Baja California. And this, my grandfather, like I said, was a real man's man. He had been doing this since the 50s, driving down to Baja California. And back in, when I went down, it was a very, very different place. Even to this day, I look at Google Maps and it's built. When I went, it was empty. And it's a beautiful part of the country. If you ever want to go down to Baja California, it's absolutely gorgeous. There's a town on the way down called Mulegé. It's beautiful. So Bapa was his man's man. When he graduated high school, 18, he walks home from school that day, and his dad, he opens the door, his dad goes, "Hey, where's your rent check?" And my Bapa did not have any way to pay the rent, so he joined the Navy the next day and served in Korea. And he learned his lessons in life just by doing them and hardening yourself and just making it happen. And so, you know, he had stories about going down to Mexico in, like, you know, 1962 with, you know, a van and a motorcycle. And he would roll into these villages and all the locals would be like, "What's that?" They call it, like, the, you know, burro mecánico. They'd never seen motorcycles at the time. And they thought it was so strange to have motorcycles. And so he had been doing this for a long time, and he was very, very familiar with Mexico. One thing, his only rule was never drive at night, because he said people's tractors break down, and you never know what's going to be on the road 50 feet in front of you. So we would take 1 week, and we would drive down to La Paz. We had a trailer and then a big van, like an Econoline, that was converted to a bed in the back, and we chopped the boat on top. And Bapa loved to go in there and fish, and he loved to be in complete isolation. So this year, I was 14, and I was going to go alone, and my mother suggested maybe I bring a friend. So I decided I'd bring my good friend Chris Wallach with me. And Chris didn't know a lot about Bapa, and you know, a memory I have of Bapa was going to his house. He lived in the valley in Los Angeles, and I spent the night, this little boy, and I wake up in the morning for breakfast, and I go, "Hey, Bapa, you know, you have, like, some cereal or something, eat some breakfast?" And he goes, "No, but I have a tomato." And he just throws the tomato on the plate. And so that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of attitude he had. He was like very, he's like a very big guy, and he loved to intimidate people, and he was just incredibly adventurous. So, you know, we get in the car with Bapa and we start driving, and me and Chris, these kind of 14-year-old rascally kids, instantly clash, and he wanted to build a relationship with me as his grandson, I think, and take me down to Mexico. And we had been before, but I was a little bit older this time. And I think, you know, he said, maybe I can pass on some ways of living to me. And we drove down, and you get to, like, Mulegé, And you learn this history. That's where in the Mexican-American War, the Mexicans stopped the Americans from getting any farther down. I mean, it's just amazing. You get to Guerrero Negro, and it was this abandoned town in the center of the peninsula. And there was this huge eagle. It was like 300 feet tall, this iron eagle in the middle of the desert amongst abandoned buildings. And you just go in there and play around under this eagle. It was just strange places. You'd go and, you know, they didn't have the same kind of like soda. They had Pepsi Max. And I had never heard of that before. And I think it was really disgusting. And you'd go, and at the time, hardly anybody we ever encountered spoke English, because my grandfather loved to be in rural Mexico. So if we saw a town that was more than 300 people, we just blaze right through it, and then we'd stop in a place, you know, where nobody spoke English, and there maybe was a gas station. So on the way down, we had a few fun encounters. We stopped in a bay one time, and the Mexican military had parked like three battleships on the outside of the bay. And they came in, and they did all these like military landings on the shore where we were camped out in this trailer. My grandpa's this big guy, and this group of Mexican military dudes walked by, and they got their assault rifles and everything. And we had this chocolate lab with us. And the chocolate lab ran up to this Mexican military guy and just started barking, like, rawr, rawr, rawr. And the guy just took his rifle, and he just smashed, you know, just hit the dog in the head. You know, and he yelps and everything. He was okay, I think. But my grandpa just stood up, you know, this big guy. He just gets over there and just starts getting in the face of this military guy, you know. And he's got a gun. He's surrounded all his buddies with guns, and we're in his country. My grandpa did not care anything about anything that everybody else thought. And he's, you know, in his world, his way was the right way. And this caused conflict with us. Chris and I have a really fond memory of driving through the desert in Mexico, just bored. My grandfather would listen to Scottish, like Highland tunes. So we'd be driving on the road, and he'd be like this, "Hey, me last week," and like at this thing, you know. And we'd get so, you know, fed up with it. And so my grandpa would be driving, like, you know, drinking a beer, driving, with the Scottish music playing, and hauling a trailer with us two kids in it. And one time he falls asleep in the middle of the day while driving, drinking this beer. And, you know, the car just starts veering off the road, and it's like this mountain pass. And Chris and I have to, like, shake him and wake him up. And, of course, he denies that any of this ever happened. So, you know, and Chris and I had our own adventures down there, being young guys that were essentially set free to do whatever we want. I remember we came into this town, and there were these guys we met at this party. Like, the campsite was here, we were camped out, and there was this huge, like, fiesta, like a quinceañera kind of massive party. And we kind of went over there, and we met these dudes, and they had a car, and they had a Cure CD, and we thought that was totally cool. We're like, oh, they like the Cure, they must be pretty cool guys. And they're hanging out, they're trying to get us to, like, you know, they were like, well, you guys are Americans, and you can get any lady you want, you know. And we were a little bit young for that. And suffice to say, we met all sorts of really interesting people. So where this theme comes in is as we got down, and he takes 7 days to drive down to La Paz, and he just parks out 2 hours down a dirt road on a beach where there was nobody, like absolutely nobody. And we would just sit down, and he would just sit in a chair, drink some beer, and go fishing. And then if anybody came in with fish, he'd buy fish from them. And we would just sit there for like 3 months. So Chris and I got down there as 14-year-olds, and we got really, really bored really fast. And it turned into a lot of conflict, like yelling at my grandfather, you know, just leaving, you know. And so his solution was to just wake up one morning and come to Chris and I and say, pack your bags, you're going home. And we said, sure. What are you going to do? So he drives us to the airport in La Paz, which is 2 hours away, I think, opens the sliding van door, says, get out, hands me a couple hundred dollars, closes the door, and leaves. And so Chris and I, these 14-year-old guys, are at this airport. Nobody speaks English. And we're trying to figure out what to do. And Chris calls his mother. And she tells us, like, to get on this airplane and We get on this airplane, we come home. And it's really fond memories. So I called my mom before I came here tonight. And I asked her, I said, Mom, you know, what do you recall of this time? And she said, well, you guys got in a car and you went to Bapa down in Mexico. And then I got a call, you know, a few weeks later. And he said that he had dumped you at the airport. And I was really mad with him. And I said, yeah, he really showed me, like, just dumping me at the airport, I guess, how to be a man in his opinion. And she said, yeah, you know, he found out that he had cancer and was going to die, you know, about that time. And I think it struck me because I was an unruly 14-year-old kid who did not want to participate in the way that Grandpa was telling me how to be a man. And it struck me as, oh, this is a moment when Bapa could just throw me in an airport and show me what it was like to be a man.